This is Average Joe Finances Podcast, episode 49.
If you're watching this on YouTube, make sure you smash that like button and click subscribe. For those of you listening on a podcast platform, be sure to subscribe on whatever platform that is and leave us a rating if you can. The more likes, ratings, and subscriptions that we get, the more we can spread the message and grow our community. So we also have a free Facebook group. It's called the Average Joe Finances Network. Check us out, join the group, join the community, ask questions, and become a part of the team. All of our other social media accounts are listed in our flow page, and we have them in the video or podcast description below.
The biggest thing is that people need someone that's going to be looking over and really quarterbacking their overall financial world, not just buying individual, you know, stocks on a daily basis or trading crypto or whatever the case may be, because I think that's just all the hype in the media, and that's what, you know, gets people to click on things and kind of go after, you know, what's hot, you know, in the market today versus looking at that long-term, you know, growth and future for their overall financial being is why we do what we do on a daily basis.
Welcome to the Average Joe Finances Podcast. Are you trying to get out of debt? Invest, or just not sure where to start? Then this is the place for you. We discuss different ways to get out of the rat race and build your wealth. Join us on this wild ride to financial freedom.
Hey, how's it going, everybody? So today we have two guests on with us, and that's Mike Sirocco and Zach Zenda. I'm going to go a little bit over their background individually and then what they're doing as a team. So Mike was born and raised in New Jersey. He's a Division I student athlete and captain of the track and field and cross country team at Rider University. Currently, he resides in northern New Jersey. He's married to his wife, Nicole. She's a nurse and has one dog, and in free time enjoys all things outdoors, running, hiking, skiing in the winter. So anything that's outside, he's on it. Zach was also born and raised in New Jersey. Also a Division I student athlete and captain of the lacrosse team at Rutgers University. And for those of you listening right now, just, you know, that's definitely a Northeast sport. Lacrosse was huge where I grew up too on Long Island. So a lot of people here probably don't even know what that is. So awesome, awesome. So he currently resides in central New Jersey. He's married to his wife, Zara, who's a physician, has one dog, a cat, and in his free time enjoys playing golf, working out, and spending time at the beach. That's definitely one of the best things to do up there on the Jersey Shore. All right, so let's talk about Mike and Zach as a team. They both entered the financial services business in 2013, right out of college. They had similar backgrounds and have been obsessed with the business ever since. They became business partners in 2015 and launched their own company, Emeritus Wealth Group, in 2019. So currently, Emeritus is a full-service financial planning and wealth management firm with over 500 clients throughout the country. They specialize in working with affluent clients, Henrys as they call them, high earners, not rich yet, medical professionals, and small business owners. They love helping new and existing clients accomplish their financial goals. Wow, guys, what a background. Super stoked to have you on the show today. Welcome.
Thanks for having us, Mike. Yeah, we're excited.
Yeah, Mike, thank you very much. We're looking forward to having the interview here today and learning more about you too.
All right, right on. So the way I like to start this off is the way I start off every podcast episode is I want to know a little bit more about you besides just your background. So if you could share with us a little bit about yourself and share your story. Actually, Mike, if you can go first, because we share the same first name.
Love it. Yep. No, absolutely. You hit us with a good background with, you know, everything about us. But I think, yeah, Zach and I started, you know, 2013, both came right into the financial services industry with really no experience. Growing up, my mom was a teacher, retired now, thankfully. My father just retired. He was a CPA for 30 plus years. I always thought I wanted to do something in the financial industry. I didn't know exactly what that was going to be. And, you know, I think the coolest part now, I heard you say, oh, 500 clients like our team has, we manage assets, we do all things financial planning. But in 2013, you kind of put this shingle up and say, oh, I'm a financial advisor with zero clients. And now to think, okay, going on 9 years later, we got 500 plus and growing. It's pretty cool. So yeah, it's a lot of stories and trials and tribulations since then.
Right on, right on. And, you know, we're also going in alphabetical order for those of you listening out there, for anybody that has like OCD about stuff like that. So Zach, if you could share with us a little bit about yourself too.
Absolutely. So I'm sure you could tell I was last in everything with both my first and last name. And then, of course, I decided to marry my wife, who is a Z as well. So we are both double Z. So pretty interesting stuff there. But to piggyback on what Mike said, we both graduated from college around the same time. And I knew graduating from college, finishing up lacrosse, Rutgers actually did win their first NCAA tournament game today. So I just want to give a little shout out to those guys there. But after graduating, I knew I wanted to get into, some sort of sales type of role, owning my own business. My father owns a business. My grandparents own businesses. So owning businesses was something that, was kind of in the family and something I wanted to get into, but loved the financial industry that I started to learn more about, towards the end of college. And, like Mike said, we met our first day, as financial advisors, back in 2013. And, we're almost 9 years later and with 500 plus clients and continuing to grow so much now, where never could have imagined where we are today with all the ups and downs and troubles and trials and tribulations. That it was just, it's been a long ride, but it's exciting. I feel like we've got another 20, 30 years ahead and looking forward to it. So, excited to talk more about that today here.
All right. Fantastic. Great background for both of you guys. I mean, like I told you before we started the show, I like to take notes. And one of the things that I wrote down here, and it's something that you guys have in common, which both of you have a lot of things in common, minus, where you fall out in the alphabet with the double Z's and everything. But, sure. So for Mike, your dad was a CPA, right? And Zach, your parents were, your father owned a business, your grandparents owned a business. So you guys have a lot of things in common when it comes to, the next generation above you, your family, your role models, giving you that, I guess kind of that initial motivation, right? Because you saw what they were doing. And for Mike, that's one of the things, I guess, that helped you fall in love with the financial aspect of things, was you kind of grew up in that lifestyle, right? And, Zach, you grew up with your family being entrepreneurial, right? So you have that background already. It's kind of set in your DNA, right?
Right. Yeah, no, Zach and I talk about all the time with, wearing the business owner hat, the advisor hat, the managing personnel hat, which is our least favorite. Not that we love our staff, but it's just not the one that's, sometimes easiest when it comes to the business. But, I remember waking up early as a child on weekends. My dad would have the Investor's Business Daily open on the kitchen table, going through stocks. I didn't know what the heck he was. I just wanted to read cartoons and read the sports section. But, him going through that, tracking things, and just, you see where technology is now. I don't know if I say I was destined for the financial services, but like Zach said, a sales role, not having anybody kind of make our schedule, we make our schedules for ourselves, and running the business is kind of the most rewarding part.
Right on. Yeah. So I want to touch on that a little bit too, because something that you just brought up with, the fact that you saw your dad on the weekends, looking at the paper, looking at the stocks on the paper. And now we have this thing right here that just, you can look at it instantly. You can see as it's going up, as it's going down. That's what day traders are doing, right? They're just, now on their phone, or they'll be on their laptop and they can do it from home. They don't have to worry about somebody doing it for them. It's pretty amazing. We carry these powerful computers in our pockets. So, so there's a couple different topics that I wanted to go over with you today. And, one of them is, and this is a question I want to ask you, I guess the first question is, why would somebody, or why should somebody work with a financial advisor?
That's a great question. I think we get that question all the time. In today's day and age with, no commissions, no fees, Robinhood, everybody, you said it too, everybody's a day trader right now. Everybody thinks that, they can kind of time the market. We work with highly successful people. And I think you touched on this earlier. We work with a lot of people in the medical market, physicians, business owners, Henrys, what we like to call them, high earners, not rich yet. These people are busy from sun up to sundown. They just truly don't have the time, effort, and energy to really focus, whether it's on the market or their overall plan. And we'll talk a little bit about that more. It's not just, just looking at the stock market on a daily basis. We're helping clients create an individual customized plan, reaching specific financial goals, helping them eliminate debt, helping them come up with, you know, how for the business owners, how to make sure that they're, you know, maximizing their deductions and retirement plans, offering rich benefits. So I'm kind of going in a tangent here, but I think the biggest thing is that people need someone that's going to be looking over and really quarterbacking their overall financial world, not just buying individual, you know, stocks on a daily basis or trading crypto or whatever the case may be, because I think that's just all the hype in the media. And that's what, you know, gets people to click on things and kind of go after, you know, what's hot, you know, in the market today versus looking at that long-term, you know, growth and future for their overall financial being is why we do what we do on a daily basis.
Yeah, that's great. You know, and one of the things that I wrote down here is, you know, a lot of people now from home, especially, you know, due to the pandemic and everything, are stuck and they're trying to do, you know, their research and due diligence and figure out how to get into stocks themselves, especially if they've never done it before. And the big thing that you said there is people sit here and they try to time the market, right? And it's nearly impossible to time the market, right? And try to get in at the right time. You know, that famous saying, you know, the best time to invest was 20 years ago. The second best time is right now. So, I'm a big buy and hold guy myself. I don't sit here and try to time the market and figure out when I should get out of a certain thing and when I should buy into a certain thing. The last time I did that, I lost a lot of money and I was very upset. So I don't do that anymore. There was one particular stock that I tried to do that with, and I doubled my money, which was fantastic. But if I would have held it a little bit longer, even though I told myself this was a buy and hold, instead of doubling that $4,000 into $8,000, today it would be $500,000 if I would have never even put anything else into it. But, and that happened 3 months later, by the way, I just got too overexcited that I doubled my money and I pulled out. So, you know, timing the market's never the best thing to try to do. The other thing you said too is the hype in the media. You see that so much right now. So I still have my day job, right? I'm in the Navy, but I have a TV on in the background while I'm doing my work throughout the day. I usually leave it on CNBC, and I'm watching, you know, some of these talking heads going over, you know, what's hot right now, what's going on with this and that. You know, the big thing they've been talking about lately is cryptocurrencies and that whole Dogecoin thing, and you know, all this to the moon stuff that Gen Z talks about, right? I get it, I get the hype and everything, but when you have, you know, big names coming out here and you know, I'm not going to call out any names, but you have these big names that come out here and say certain things. And the next thing you know, these whales come in here and blow it up. And I don't know, I have a real hard time with that when it comes to hyping things up. And people ask me like, hey, you know, did you get in on this? Did you get in on that? I'm like, nope, it's not part of my plan. So, yeah, definitely appreciate you like bringing that up, because hype is something that could be pretty dangerous for a lot of folks, especially if you don't know what you're doing.
I totally agree. And I think the biggest thing that we saw, Mike and myself, working with our clients and family and friends, is during the pandemic, you didn't really have much to do. Everybody was stuck at home. So the market was just like another hobby to really kind of keep yourself active. And I think more people started getting involved with the stock market, which I think is a terrific thing too, which, you know, we can kind of touch on at some point, where there's more and more people getting into the stock market for the first time ever. But again, we talk about the gamification of investing and how people kind of look at it as, this isn't betting on football on Sundays. This is, you know, this is the market. This is a whole other animal. But what we, you know, we want to make sure that people understand truly what it is that they're doing. I know, Mike, you can touch a little bit on it too, but, you know, it's helped us talk to more and more people because they're more excited about it. But we also want to make sure we bring people's expectations, realities back down to, you know, back down to earth, saying like, look, you're just not going to double and triple your money every couple of months in the stock market, you know, on any given week here.
Yeah. We also look at, you know, a lot of our younger clients. Again, we have clients that are 20 years old all the way up to, I think our oldest client now is probably in their 80s and everywhere in between. But the younger clients that maybe started working in the just after 2008 financial crisis have really never seen the market go down, right? So they hop on the TV or, like you said, CNBC or their app on their phone, and they'll be like, guys, you know, my account went down. We're like, yeah, that happens, right? Like, it doesn't just only go up. And, you know, I like your story. You said, oh, I sold too early, or, you know, I could have had 500 grand. We hear stories like that all the time, right? And you're not alone. I think everyone knows, whether they're maybe they don't know, but everyone's probably heard the saying, buy low, sell high, right? Yet it's human nature, right? It's emotional. This is your money. So most people buy high and sell low, and they know it's the wrong time to do it, but it just becomes difficult. So I guess, you know, coming back to that first question too, like, why should someone have an advisor? Not everyone should, right? Obviously we think they should, that's what we do. But again, it's kind of time, and we look at it as, we call ourselves the CFO, right? The chief financial officer of someone's financial plan, where we're kind of their accountability partner or accountability coach, where maybe they have a spouse or, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend, whoever. But if not, at times that you might not want to be thinking about your money, your finances or investments, well, we're going to make you do that. So I think that's a big piece of it. But no, there's people out there that, again, there's no one size fits all. Some people don't. You know, we have clients that are good friends of ours too. We might just help them with one specific segment, but they do all their own investing, or we help with insurance. You know, there's a lot of pieces to it. So yeah, it's a wild world out there though when it comes to the stock game.
Yeah, absolutely. And full disclosure, so everybody knows too, I use a financial advisor as well. So I have a couple of things that I do on my own, but you know, I do have some accounts with a financial advisor out here, and you know, they keep me honest, right? And they make sure I get taken care of. And a lot of times I try to see if I can get a better percentage than what my financial advisor gets me. Sometimes I win, sometimes I lose, but it's okay. You know, I absolutely love the financial advisor I use. They do great work for me. I've got my life insurance policies through them. I've got a joint investment account open through them, and it just works out really well. It's one of those nice things that I can, you know, I pay it monthly. I set it and I forget it, and they invest the money, you know, according to their plan, or according to the plan that we came up with together, right? And I think that's one of the things that people need to really understand is, like, when you have a financial advisor, it's not just them taking care of your money. It's a plan that you guys work with together. They're an advisor, right? It's your money. You're going to do with it what you want to do, but the financial advisor is going to help guide you in the right direction. At least that's the way I use mine. And I absolutely love the relationship, and it just works out well that way. There was something that you said, a key word that I want to point out here, because this is tied to your money, right? It's emotion, right? You said people get emotional when they're, you know, investing their money. And, you know, a lot of times they'll buy high and sell low because, you know, they're like, oh man, it's going down. I got to get out. I'm losing too much. And, you know, it's funny because I talk about this with people at work all the time. Just people I know that just do like a little bit of investing and things. And they say, oh man, yesterday I lost, you know, I lost this much money. I said, you didn't lose any money yesterday. I was like, your stocks lost value. You lost value. I was like, if you hold on to it and wait, it will come back. You didn't lose anything. Just leave it alone. Don't get all emotional and just sell it, right? But I get it. Like you said, it's really hard to sometimes separate the emotion from that, the attachment that you have, right? Let's get to, there's a couple things that you had sent me. One of the things was, you know, people have different routines in life, right? And when it comes to investing, you know, you should have a routine in your investing as well. But just in general in life, like, so what are like some good, you know, routines that you guys do, or, you know, morning routines? Like, how do you guys start your day? Like, when you're like, okay, I'm going to get up and I'm going to help my clients today. What does a typical day for the two of you as a team look like?
Go ahead, Zach.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great question. And that's one of the biggest things that we do practice what we preach when it comes to, you know, we take our financial life seriously, or we take our emotional and physical well-being. So every morning, Mike and I actually start on a phone call with one of our clients, as well as a really good friend. He owns a business, physical therapy, very interesting business. And we start on the phone at 5:55 every morning. And we talk about the one most important thing that we need to do each and every day. And that changes on a daily basis, but having that systematic every single morning, getting up, you know, I typically like to get up between 5:15, get a couple things done, get that phone call and get a workout in. And then we're cruising by 7:30 every morning. Whether it's an initial phone call, going out, breakfasts that we do with clients, and centers of influence that we work with. But yeah, every day, it's been a staple of myself and Mike, and another really close client and friend for, I think, around 4 years, Mike, almost 4 years now.
Yeah.
We started it years ago with Frank, who is a client and friend of ours, because just going through some tough times, you know, tough times in the business, trying to grow and build our business, you know, just needed something where every single morning it was just that same constant that we'd get up, you know, we'd start our days, you know, there's days you don't want to get out of bed early, you know, late nights, early mornings, you want to have that consistency. And that kind of ties into the financial life of our clients, where you want to make sure that you have these consistent, you know, savings strategies. You want to make sure that you're constantly reviewing with your advisor. It makes us happy, you know, that you have an advisor actually, and that you're happy with your advisor, because we want to make sure that people understand that financial advisors aren't, you know, they have a bad rap sometimes. And I think that's where Mike and myself and our team have done a really great job of building our network, is that we truly do care about our clients' well-being more than anything we could ever imagine. I mean, outside our families, to be honest. But, you know, we eat, sleep, and breathe this business. It's really what we think about first thing in the morning, 5:55 in the morning, to, you know, 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night. So, Mike, I'll kind of let you join in on that.
But I used to be 11 o'clock, and now I try to get to sleep by 10. So short. If I'm going to get up that early, I got to go to sleep. But no, we have a really good routine with that, catching up right early morning, the first phone call, typically just in the life of an advisor, if you will. Like, Mondays are kind of our prep day, right? Other meetings for the week. We have meetings from time to time or lunches, but it's really, again, pre-pandemic. Now we're finally getting back to our office, so things are changing. We could talk on that in a minute. But, you know, from March, when the pandemic hit in 2020, until about a couple, second week of May, until a couple weeks ago, we really weren't seeing anybody face-to-face. It went almost all 100% virtual. So Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we're seeing, you know, what's that, 2 to 5 people every day on Zoom, phone calls, reviews. And then Fridays, you know, sometimes we have a meeting or two. Sometimes it's just team in the office recapping the week, what outstanding items. You know, we're really busy and kind of at capacity right now. So we literally just interviewed and gave another staff person, you know, an offer that we're going to bring on, which is pretty exciting for us. Again, there's only so many hours in the day, and we want to keep scaling and adding clients. But yeah, I think it's just consistency every week to the best that we can, having meetings, having it all focused. But you know what happens, right? One of those talking heads tweet something out or says something on Saturday Night Live without using names, which we all know who I'm talking about. Things go crazy. Well, there might be 5 to 10 meetings or calls that get thrown on our calendar. So it's trying to say, hey, how do we make things, you know, most important, prioritize? And it's just every day is so different, right? I know we know that, you know, we're fans of the show now, being on here, and we know you got your real estate license, right? So things pop up, somebody wants to go see a house, you got to do it, right? So it's kind of the same thing in our world. Yeah, the clients always come first, like Zach said.
Yeah, right on. You know, and it's funny that you both use this word quite a few times when you were going over this answer, and that was consistency, right? So I think, you know, this, what I like about what you guys are doing, like this 5:55 in the morning phone call, I mean, that's accountability right there, right? So you guys are holding each other accountable.
You're welcome to join us on there. You could join us. I don't know what hour in Hawaii that would be.
That'll be 11:55 p.m. at night for me.
We'll give you the dial-in number.
I'll be in bed because I'm getting up around the same time as you guys, but my time. So you guys are already halfway into your day by the time I'm waking up in the morning. But yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. So that accountability piece, that consistency that you guys have, you know, having a routine, you know, that's so important for not only what you're doing with your finances, but just life in general. Like I was saying before I asked you that question, you can't just look at your financial health and think that needs to be the number one thing. You need to take care of your mental health, physical health, financial health. Like it's all tied in together. And I've brought that up a couple of times on my show. And, you know, the fact that you guys, you know, run your business that way, is very refreshing. And the other thing that's refreshing is, you know, you guys are true like fiduciaries, right? Like you really care about your clients and you're putting them first, right? And that's, you know, to hear a financial advisor talking like that, it's very nice to hear. It's probably a testament to why your business has scaled so much so far to where you're at right now and why you're going to continue to scale, because you guys are obviously doing something right. So
thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Some other things is you guys have sent me some topics, which are really awesome. And this one is this is definitely one I wanted to ask you about, right? So what is the one thing that all retirees, especially, you know, ones that you've worked with, what is the one thing that they all say that they wish they would have done earlier? I guess what's the number one regret you've guys have heard?
Go for it, Mike, go for it. Yeah.
We use this story in virtually every meeting, whether it's a brand new client, a review, someone, again, 20 years old or 80 years old and everywhere in between. Most retirees say, man, I wish I could have went back to when I was first earning that first paycheck, whenever I got my first job, part-time, full-time salary, whatever. And I could have put away more money. I could have started earlier, compound interest, right? Another wonder of the world, that type of story. Yet on the other side of the coin, we look at our younger clients, these Henrys and other people that we discussed before the show started, and they all tell us, not all, but I guess overgeneralization, Mike, Zach, I got the whole rest of my life to save money, right? I got this, my 401k, your TSP in the Navy. They got all this stuff where, okay, that's great. But again, it's kind of finding that happy median and balance. And I think I'll let Zach answer in a second, again, kind of his thoughts. But everyone's in this Robin Hood world now, right? And again, we're super pumped that a lot of people are getting into investing. I was listening to an article this week or listening to a podcast this week that talked about the median age of a Robin Hood user today is 31 years old. And 50% of Robin Hood users are first time investors. So it's great that they're getting into it, right? But it's okay. Do you know what's going on? Like, it's just kind of making sure you have all your ducks in a row kind of thing. And I'm getting off topic, but it's like, it's great that people are investing, but are we investing in the right things? That's where we try to help add some value, where you probably want to review that with an advisor. But I think, yeah, the earlier you can start on anything, the better off you're going to be for sure.
Mike hit the nail on the head there. It's starting early, but it's having that plan is what are those buckets of money doing for you and where are you saving for it? So it's easy to save $5,000 or $10,000 or $20,000 or $50,000, but then, you know, maybe wipe that out for a down payment on a home or starting a business. And so that's the strategy where we talk to our clients about this. Look, we want you to save money, but we want you to have a purpose of why you're saving it, what you're saving it for. It's like, you know, it's like having a goal of losing weight and saying, well, I'm not going to really write any goals down. I'm not going to change my diets or my habits or my exercise. I'm just going to hope I lose weight. And that's really it. And that's kind of the same thing in finance too. But I think everyone just gets so caught up and wrapped in of the products and the investments and the rates of return. Yet, if we look at this country, you know, we're still not in the best financial shape right now. We're in more debt than we've ever been in our entire lives, but we're talking about Dogecoin and Robinhood and cryptocurrencies, but we're not talking about what happens to people when they get to retirement. How are they living off of, you know, are they able to live off of 30, 50, 70, 100, $100,000 a year? I don't know. And that's kind of the big question. You know, like Mike said, starting early and having a game plan that you know what you're working towards and your life's going to change, right? You know, it's not just this, you know, static plan for 35 years that you just save into a 401k plan and you retire. I mean, those days are long gone of working for the same company for 35 years and retiring, but it's starting early and having a plan. So,
I think one more thing that we always hear, right? Or I should say we ask is, are your goals in line with your money? And people often sit back and used to be face-to-face. Now they look at us through the screen and sometimes think about it. But, you know, we heard on one of your previous shows, Mike, you talked about how you took out some money and I think a loan from your TSP to put as a down payment on your house, right? And I'm laughing, not at you, I'm laughing at your commentary on that show because you're like, you know, friends or colleagues, whoever were saying, you know, Mike, you're crazy, right? Don't take a loan. You should never do that. Your money's not in the market. We've told people to do the same exact thing because their number one goal is to buy a house or a rental. Again, not just recommending blindly now that you should take money out of your retirement account, but in a certain situation, if that's a big goal of yours and that's going to help you get to where you need to be with your family, that's the only other place to have the money, then do it, right? So again, it's just that hit home for us when we heard that on your previous show. And I'm like, this is what more people need to hear. Because you're right, people go on Google or they talk to their neighbor or whoever. Oh, never do that. Well, okay, it might not fit your situation, but if it's better for that specific person, then we think you should do it kind of thing.
All right. So one, first thing is you guys just got some serious street cred with me. Because now I know that you went back and listened to some of my episodes and that's awesome. I just want to say thank you for listening to the podcast for one. For two, I want to talk a little bit about both of what you guys said. Okay. So Mike, one of the things you were talking about is how some people say that, you know, oh, hey, I wish I could have gone back. And I said that too, with that one investment that I had, man, I wish I could have went back and, you know, smacked my hand and not hit the sell button when I did. Right. Look, it happened. I still made money. I made 100% return on that investment. I'm happy about it. You know, if I sat here and dwelled on it more and more, the more I dwell on it, the more like FOMO I get. So it's, you know, you can't sit here and dwell on that stuff. You know, you started when you started, take action now and just keep going. Of course, everybody wishes they could have started earlier. Of course, everybody's like, man, if I knew what I, you know, now what I, you know, if I knew back then what I know now, oh man, I'd be a millionaire. Yeah, of course you would, right? But it takes these life lessons to get to where you are right now. And now for some of your younger clients too, you know, I really hope that the message gets to them when they hear it from the older generations, because younger guys and gals are pretty thick-headed. I know I was too, because I remember when I was younger, people telling me, oh man, you need to invest. You need to just, you know, set your money, set it and forget it. Don't worry about it. And I was like, oh no, I was like, I'm young. And I was like, I'm gonna get my pension from the Navy. I'm good. Man, that pension ain't gonna be nothing when I retire. I mean, it's nice. I'm gonna get something, but compared to my lifestyle now, where I'm at right now, it will not fit my needs, right? It'll pay a lot of my expenses, which will be great, but it will not fit my needs. So there's other things that I had to go and do. So go invest in real estate and figure out what I'm gonna do when I retire from the Navy, you know, invest more in my TSP or, open up this other account with my financial advisor and little things like that. You know, when you take action, you build a plan. You know, I sat down and I looked at my financial plan with my financial advisor. The last time we sat down and, you know, I went over my goals, like, hey, I realistically can retire at, you know, full-time retire at 50 years old. Well, I want to do it sooner. So I told her, I was like, I want to buy some real estate. I want to do this. I want to do that. And you know, I talked to her about the whole thing when I went and took out the loan for the TSP to buy that rental property. And she didn't try to stop me. She just said, okay, well, you know, what's that going to look like for you? What's that cash on cash return on investment going to be based off of what you took out, based off of when you're paying it back and the interest rate you're paying it back at, right? So, you know, when you borrow from your thrift savings plan or from a Roth IRA or anything like that, when you pay it back, the interest you're paying is you're actually paying yourself. Right. So you're paying that higher interest rate, but it's all your money. Right. But at the same time, when the money's not in that account, it's not getting that compound interest. It's not sitting in the market until you put it back in. So, you know, I had to sit here and look at all the numbers and crunch all the numbers and make sure that it made enough sense that taking out that loan was in the long run worth it for me. And it was. So it worked out. So I did it. So yeah, it's little things like that, but a lot of times people will just get into it and they won't do the research and they'll wonder why, you know, they've been putting all this money away and they're still broke. So you have to do your research. You have to talk to people, get coached, get mentored, get a financial advisor. I mean, that stuff's important. You can't just, I mean, some people can just go out there and do it on their own. Like if you can sit there and you have the time to research it and you've got that time on your hands, hey, good for you. But you know, for me being active duty in the Navy, I don't have that kind of time, you know, and on top of that, you know, I'm also a real estate agent. I'm also a finance coach and I'm also running this podcast. So I don't get much free time and the free time I do have, I don't want to spend it researching. I want to spend it with my family, you know? So it gets a little difficult sometimes, which is why I've changed up a couple things on my end too, change up my routine. I'm no longer going to be doing interviews on Sundays anymore after this Sunday, because I'm trying to claim some of that time back. And I'm trying to prepare myself for my transition out of the military. So I think, you know, this all ties back into what we talked about earlier about routines and building your routine and having it set. So now going back to what Zach was talking about, you know, you were talking about retirement, right? Like, what does that look like for some people? You know, when you're looking at the big picture, what does your retirement look like for you? What are your goals to get to retirement? That's the biggest question that people, I guess, tend to just overlook. They just say, here's my number. This is what I want to be at. But you don't, I mean, you tell yourself that that's your goal. You tell yourself that that's where you want to be when you're 50, 60, 70, whatever, you know, your age is you want to retire, but what are you doing to get there? And, you know, that's where you guys come in, right? And you're helping them build these plans. So yeah, that's the big thing. What does retirement look like for you? Right. So yeah, love it, guys. Sorry, I'm getting a little long winded, but I'm trying to go back and forth and hit both your points, right? So that's awesome. Now, okay, there was something else that you guys sent me that you wanted to talk about, and I really like this one too, because you know we're talking about retiring, right? Like, what's that number for you? How much per year do you need? You know, and it's different for everybody. Everybody's, you know, financial independence or their retirement number is different, right? Somebody could say, hey, I could retire off 40 grand a year and I'm good. Some people like, no, I need at least six figures. I need, you know, 250. Some people like, hey, I need $1 million a year. It just depends on your lifestyle and what it is you're trying to do, right? So why is it that, you know, somebody can't retire off of like $1 million in their 401k? This was one of the things you guys sent me. And I really want to hear the answer to this because a lot of people will tell you $1 million is a lot of money, but look at where we're going and look at inflation. Why is $1 million like not enough?
Let's take a brief moment to hear from our show sponsors. Hey, what's going on, everybody? It's Mike Cav from Average Joe Finances. Just want to talk to you today about Prep Agent. If you're interested in learning how to become a real estate agent and being able to pass the test on your first try, check out Prep Agent. Check out the link below in the show notes or in the video description. Hey everybody, how's it going? This is Mike Cav with Average Joe Finances. You know, we're living in some pretty tough times right now. And if you don't have life insurance, you should probably get it. You need to protect yourself, protect your family, and protect what you own. Check out the link below in the show notes or in the video description.
Let's get back to today's episode.
You're listening to the Average Joe Finances Podcast. Whether it's single or multifamily real estate, the stock market, or side hustles, we discuss it all. Strap in and enjoy the ride.
It's a great question. And again, everything is relative to everybody's situation, right? So, you know, $1 million could be all the money in the world to someone. It could be, you know, pennies to somebody else. But here's the way that we look at it. So in retirement, let's say you have $1 million and it's sitting in your 401k. And you're trying to make that money last for, you know, you're age 60. So let's say life expectancy, you got about another 25, 30 years on your side. Modern medicine, I think people are living much, much longer nowadays. And I think we can all agree on that. So you're taking out on average somewhere between 3-4% per year is the number. It's industry-wide percentage that you can take out. And there's about a 93-97% chance that you'll never run out of money. Based on all the Monte Carlo simulations, you know, markets up, markets down, you could take somewhere between 3-4% out per year. So you're thinking about 30-40 grand per $1 million that you can take out and live off of. Well, what's one of the things that we haven't done from our 401k? We haven't paid taxes on that money yet, right? So let's say we're taking out $30,000. Well, that's a gross number. We still have to pay Uncle Sam. So whether you live in Jersey, I don't know what Hawaii state tax is, but you know, you're maybe netting about $20,000, $22,000 of that $30,000. Well, in Jersey, you know, and I'm sure in Hawaii too, $22,000 doesn't go that far. You know, yeah, you've got some Social Security, maybe you have a pension like you do from the military, but pensions are few and far between these days. So we tell people is, look, you know, $22,000 plus maybe some Social Security, it's not a whole...
Can I step in on that real quick? Because what you mentioned about the military pension, because a lot of people don't know this. Kids joining the military nowadays, they don't get that pension no more. Like, it's gone. It is now strictly TSP and they match up to 5%, right? So now you're on your own for retirement. So like you said, so I just want to go into that because like you said, pensions are far and few in between. That is correct because even the military just got rid of it recently. I'm grandfathered into it because I've been in for, you know, 19 years, but it's one of those things where, you know, not even we're losing it now too.
Yeah. And it's not a surprise. I mean, these, you know, the longer people are living, these pension funds are going away and they're pretty much probably going to be extinct over the next couple of years, you know, of any new ones obviously coming out. But yeah, so going back to it, it's, you know, thinking about it, where can you live off of $22,000 a year from your 401k? I mean, it's not that much money that you're taking out and pretty much giving yourself a almost 100% success rate of never running out of money. Now, could you take more money out? Sure, you could. But again, if you're taking 5-7% out per year, and we have a year like we did last year during COVID, and the markets take a 20-40% dive, you know, are you able to take money out during those types of market downturns, right? So these are all the little things that it becomes so important. You know, we talk to people with, as they get closer to retirement, your advisor becomes so impactful for you during those years when you're actually taking money out even more than when you're saving money, because if you're making those wrong decisions, you could lose a significant chunk of your 401k if you're taking out too much money and the market's going down. So these are all things that you just have to make sure that you're understanding. And Mike, I don't know if I'm missing anything here, but if you want to add anything in here.
No, yeah, I think, you know, Mike, you hit it. Inflation is the big word, right? Obviously, things are going to cost a heck of a lot more in the future than they cost today. People are living longer, advancements, medicine, technology, and there's just unknowns, right? The markets. I look at people that we deal with now. Neither of us were in the business.
How about taxes, Mike? Taxes.
Yeah, I was going to say taxes is big. And, you know, look at 2008. We're talking last year with COVID. Okay, the market went down 30 and the S&P still finished up positive, pretty up, you know, pretty big for the year. But if you're taking dollars out the same point when the market's down, or 2008, we know people that had $2 million and lost 50% of their accounts, right? If you lose $1 million and you're in retirement, are you really, it's easier for somebody like us to sit back and say, oh, keep your money invested, right? But what if that's actually your money? So then those people sold, right? Did it at the worst time. What happened in 2009? The market came roaring back. But again, it's just, there's a lot of unknowns, even more of a reason why, you know, we truly believe you should have some type of accountability coach or partner, or, you know, an advisor that you can reach out to and trust, because that's another big thing we talk about, right? Most clients just want someone to talk to about, most people, I should say, want someone to talk to about their money in times that the market's down. Nobody wants to talk about, you know, last year, everybody made money from April 1st to the end of the year, right? It's not like people were looking for an advisor. They might have been, but it's times, you know, February to March, market goes down 20, 30. That's when people are maybe looking for some help. So,
yeah, right on. So one of the things I want to point out there that you just said is, you know, the whole thing about having a coach or a financial advisor, like, that's great, but it's the accountability, right? You need to have an accountability partner, whether it's your financial advisor, whether it's a coach, whether it's someone you confide in. You just need to have somebody that's going to help you, you know, maintain that accountability. And yeah, I mean, 2008, you know, what happened back in March is nothing compared to what happened back in 2008, both for the stock market and the housing bubble. I mean, that was absolutely detrimental to the entire country, right? I mean, when you're sitting here looking at, especially like in real estate too, like you're sitting here looking at property values go down 40 to 60%. Well, guess when I bought my first house? July of 2007. I short sold that house because I PCS'd and I transferred out of that command. I couldn't rent it out. I had it on the market for 9 months unoccupied before I finally got a renter. I pulled it off the market, had a renter in there that was paying less than what my mortgage was because it wasn't a good rental area. When my renter left, because I was eating the cost every month. Then when my renter left, I put it back on the market and eventually was able to short sell it. I bought the house for $250,000, and this is back when I was an E5. So I wasn't, you know, making the best amount of money. And this is back when my wife was working too, before we had kids. And I wound up selling that property for $172,000. So that one stung big time. So it's definitely something people got to keep in mind, right? Like, do you always want to just get out right away, or do you want to wait? Like, and now I look at the property value for that home, like right now, and it's pushing 400,000.
I was going to say the housing market is a completely different animal now than completely. It was. I mean, I don't know how it is in Hawaii, but people are paying, you know, we have clients every day trying to call us, trying to get money because they're trying to buy houses. They're losing houses over asking price of $60,000, $70,000, $80,000, $100,000. So again, these are financial decisions that, I mean, again, Mike and I don't know. I'm sure you don't know either. We don't know where things are going over the next 6 to 12 months, but are these people going to be in a similar situation to those like yourself in 2007 buying these houses? We're like, hey, you know, the market's just going to keep going up. I mean, who's to say that there's not going to be another, you know, housing market or housing bubble, if you will. So again, these are all these financial decisions that people are making that, again, we don't know what those ramifications are going to be for. We don't know how long right now.
So, yeah. I mean, if we did know, we, you know, in a couple of years, we'd all be filthy rich if we knew where everything was going. Right. And yeah, the same thing's happened out here. The housing market in Hawaii has always been crazy. Like, even when I moved here 3 years ago, I was trying to buy a property out here before the market was the way it is now. And I kept losing homes in bidding wars. If you weren't offering over asking price out here, it's insane. Now it's even more crazy. And like you said, up to 100,000, like that's like normal here, like 50 to 125,000 over asking prices is what homes are going for out here. It's absolutely insane. So it could flip on a dime. You know, we're going to start seeing mortgage rates go up. You know, it's already starting to happen. And when that happens, you know, I think the housing market's going to start to normalize and the price is going to come back down to match, you know, the interest rates. The thing is right now with people being able to borrow at such low interest rates, it's essentially free money. Right. Yep. And they're borrowing at such low rates that they can afford the more expensive house. Well, they're not buying the more expensive house. They're just paying more for the house they would have bought if the rate was still a little bit higher, but the house would have been less of a price. So yeah, it's kind of wild. Like people are still probably buying the same thing they would have bought a couple of years ago. With the rates being higher, it's just the house wouldn't have sold that high. So I want to talk about one more thing. Because we're kind of going here. I love it too. I love the conversation, by the way. But I want to talk about good debt versus bad debt, right? Because a lot of times people look at the finances, and they'll follow, you know, certain people and their methods, and they'll say, oh, you know, all debt is bad. Debt's horrible. You know, I try to explain that there's a huge difference between consumer debt and, like, you know, and I guess good debt, right? Like debt that you can leverage. So if we could just talk a little bit about that, what are your thoughts on debt?
Yeah, I'll start and I'll kick it back to Zach. It truly is about leverage, right? Like, just like you said, and we agree, I think the best and worst things that are out there are credit cards, right? So we see people all the time. We have clients that make hundreds of thousands to millions of dollars a year and everywhere in between. You know, if you can use credit cards and get points and travel and all these things, right? Awesome. But when you look at potentially having a credit card at a 20, 25, 28% interest rate, you know, we tell people like, you will, oh, but I still want to save my 401k, or I still want to invest with you, or I still want to buy real estate, whatever the story is. I mean, you look at projections on any debt reduction calculator, it's virtually impossible, right, to get that kind of debt under control versus, like you said, okay, we deal with real estate, right, mortgages and low rates, right? Got tons of people refinancing right now, which if you can get in at a lower rate, it makes sense, no brainer, right? We talk about sometimes a personal, you know, loan. So it truly is about leverage, right? I think every situation, it's so unique. You can't just go on Google, right, and say, oh, I want to buy a house in Hawaii for 300 grand. I make 75 grand and here's what my spouse makes. What do I do? Right? Like, if the answer was that easy, we wouldn't have a job and, you know, people wouldn't need us. But I think it's also, you know, from a debt perspective, student loans, right? Zach and we have another colleague, we're kind of the student loan team here. We deal with a lot of physicians, right? Medical professionals that come out with hundreds of thousands, some millions of dollars of debt that, you know, they want help. So you could say, oh my gosh, you have $500,000 of debt. That's terrible. Well, if it's going to help you get a degree and make hundreds of, again, it's all relative, but I think it's the debt, the bad debt that we look at is really just anything that's super high interest. And again, it's not potentially giving you the leverage that you need to get into something else. Or we do some asset-based lending and other things, which are just more debt we could talk about, not to get off on another tangent. But yeah, I think it's also, you just got to be careful sometimes who you take advice from or who you talk to. Kind of comes back to that stock thing, right? Like, everybody tells you that they put their money into Bitcoin or Tesla at the bottom or Apple stock, but nobody's out there pontificating and talking about the stocks that they lost all this money on, right? So I think debt kind of works the same way. I'll kick it back to Zach.
Yeah. So we always have that good debt versus bad debt conversation, right? You know, good debt is student loans, right? I mean, like I said, we have clients with a couple $100,000. We've seen in the seven figures of two, you know, married couple of physicians that are coming out of medical school with seven figures of student loan debt. You know, mortgages, we're just talking about mortgages, right? Where, you know, interest rates are, we're hearing clients come back to us at 2.65, 2.7, under 3%. I mean, you know, Mike, you said it, we're essentially borrowing for free. And we have clients sometimes saying, hey, I want to overpay on my principal. I want to put an extra $500 a month towards my mortgage. Well, I'm not saying that's right or wrong, but let's have a conversation around it, right? You're essentially giving the bank an extra $500 a month or $6,000 a year. You're getting that, you're borrowing that money for less than 3%. Can you do better in the stock market? Can you do better having leverage and liquidity and control of your money? And we talk about that all the time where, again, God forbid you got sick or you lost your job and you needed to go take a home equity line of credit and you can't because you don't have an income to prove, you know, why are you giving all this money back to the banks, right? The banks are taking your money and they're lending it out 7-8 different ways. That's how we try to help our clients understand. Look, we'll kind of look at all the, you know, reasons why you should or shouldn't pay off your, you know, the principal of your home, but can you be doing other things with that money that are a little bit, you know, more beneficial for your situation. So Mike hit it on the head too earlier, credit cards, you got to eliminate them. We talk about it. It's the, you know, we've dealt with clients with $30, $50, $100,000 of credit cards. We call it the get out of jail free one-time card where we, you know, we really try to help restructure that debt and help them, you know, take that, you know, that weight off their shoulders. Cause people, you know, people stress about it. It's a tough thing that some people get caught into and when they least expect it. And, you know, money's a taboo thing. You just don't talk to everybody about it. So when people confide in us and in their situations with debt or whatever the case may be, you know, we really want to help them come up with the best plan. And again, not all debt is bad, but there are some bad debts that are out there and then there's good debt out there. So it all kind of comes full circle and coming back to having the plan of, you know, what it is that we're trying to accomplish.
Right on. Yeah. So one of the things, you know, talking about good debt, right? So like a mortgage on your house, right? You know, you're talking about how you have some clients that are like, oh, if I just pay like an extra $500 into my house, you know, per month, I could pay it off this much sooner. You know, well, what is that $500 a month going to do for you in the stock market versus you putting it into your house? Like what's your interest rate, right? So when I first bought my house out here in Hawaii, my interest rate was 4.65. I refinanced my house at 2.25, right? Significant savings to the point that when I refinanced my house, my first mortgage payment, I was paying more into principal than interest at the very start. I've never seen that before in my life ever. So I was super excited about that. And, you know, my wife and I talk about this all the time and she's very big on, she wants to pay things off early. And, you know, she's like, hey, if the house is paid off, we could do this, that, whatever. And I, you know, and I explained to her the same way that we're talking here. And you know, and she gets it, right? But we sit here and we talk about, you know, what's our plan? And we look at, you know, if we were to pay extra into the house, you know, we would, you know, pay down our principal this much per year versus if we invested that, you know, and we're sitting here, you know, averaging around a 10 to 12% return in the stock market, you know, in our account that we have with our financial advisor, if we gave, you know, the extra money there, it would be worth so much more 30 years from now versus us putting a little extra into the home to pay it off sooner. And that's where you kind of got to weigh, you know, what's more important for where that money's going to go. Now, of course, any other debt, like the bad debt you're talking about, like personal loans, credit cards, and things like that, when you're sitting here paying 20%+ interest, you'll never get out of that if you don't pay it off ever. So it's another thing that's really refreshing to hear a financial advisor talking about is helping somebody pay off their debt first and concentrate on that before they start investing, right? That's huge. Because, you know, one of the things I've talked about on my show before, and one of the things that I help people do in my financial coaching is helping them set up their debt snowball to, you know, to get out of debt and, you know, pay off the highest interest first. Same thing as Dave Ramsey's baby steps, right? I like to get to step three and then cut off there and then go do our own thing. You know what I'm saying? So it's awesome. Like I said, really refreshing talking to you guys about this stuff because we're like of the same mindset when it comes to this and you're truly trying to provide a service to help people. And I respect that. And I really like that. So, yeah, absolutely. So, now I want to talk a little bit about the two of you guys, personally, just real quick, for our listeners out there. So, are there any particular assets that the two of you invest in? Do you guys buy real estate at all? Are you strictly in the stock market, strictly in your retirement accounts, in life insurance, or are there other asset classes that you guys buy into?
Yeah. All those things that you mentioned we're invested in, right? Both own homes, right? We both obviously participate in our employer-sponsored retirement plan, which for us is a 401k. You know, we use non-qualified investment accounts or a brokerage account, or, you know, there's different rules when you're an advisor with broker dealers and things, how certain things work, but a Robinhood type equivalent, right? Or E-Trade for the listener out there. You know, we both have life insurance policies with cash value, right? I think we have individual stock accounts. So I think it comes back to what Zach said in the beginning. right? Of just, it's this buzzword in finance. Oh, diversify, right? Like diversification in your portfolio. What does that really mean? Well, not only diversifying your portfolio or your 401k, but diversifying the assets that you have monies in. Because when things happen, like 2008 or like COVID or like whatever the heck could happen in the future, you got to have different places to access your money. So yeah, we're true believers in all that. And you know, there is not one cookie cutter solution. No, we're open to all ideas. We have clients that have big real estate portfolios that we're big fans of, right? They get great returns on that, right? And real rates of return. So we have all those things. I'll let Zach touch too.
Yeah, the last thing I would say is Mike hit the nail on the head with what we're doing. But the last thing that we're also putting a lot of money into is our business. Even our clients, we try to explain that to them because we are an open book, right? You know, we're not going to get to the very specific nitty gritty details because that just gets a little bit convoluted, complex, so on and so forth. But Mike and myself, we're investing a lot back into our company in Emeritus Wealth. And we're doing that because we want to continue to grow our business. We want to be able to scale our business. We want to continue to make sure that our clients deserve the service that they're getting. Because we deal a lot, we're in the service industry, right? We want to make sure that we can answer our clients at all times, answer all their needs. I hate dealing with 1-800 numbers and having to call up for service on the mortgage or this thing or the Verizon bill or that bill. And you got to talk to, no, we want to make sure that you have that personal touch. So again, a big place that we're putting a lot of our money is back into our own company. Because we truly believe that is a great return on investment for us, for our clients, and everything moving forward. So that's one thing I want to make sure Mike didn't forget there.
Yep. Right on. Yeah, no, that's awesome. I do the same thing right now too with the brand that I'm building with Average Joe Finances and the podcast, my social media accounts, my website, like every single penny that I've made from it. Cause yeah, I do make money, from different things. Like I have ads on my podcast. I have ads on my site. So I make a little bit from all that stuff. Every single bit of that money, I reinvest back into it, whether awesome. It's, you know, putting out an ad myself or, you know, hiring a social media designer to make me different graphics. I have a podcast editing team now that handles all of the editing of my podcasts and videos. So that's the type of stuff that I reinvest it, because the way I look at it is this is a long-term investment for me as well, is my business and my brand. And what I love about it is like, I'm not really keeping any of the money that I get from this. It's all going back into it. And I get to sit here and help people and share other people, like awesome guests that I have on my show, like you guys get to share your story of what you're doing. And who knows, hopefully, you know, there'll be some people listening to this and say, hey, I need a good financial advisor. Let me check these guys out, you know, and I'm hoping that this could send something your way, because you guys are obviously doing something, you know, something big here that, you know, in the service industry of helping other people and serving others. And, you know, it's every time I talk to people like this that are in this type of industry, and I've been very fortunate, I've been very fortunate with the guests that I've brought on my show. Every single one of you guys that I've had on here has just been absolutely amazing. I don't know if I just do a really good job screening or what, but I absolutely love talking to everybody that I've had on here, and you two are no different. It's absolutely amazing. So I want to ask you, so I've got kind of two more questions, but the I guess the last real question are, you know, from your perspective, are there any last tips or tricks that you would recommend to somebody who is getting ready to get started in their, I guess, financial freedom journey?
Yeah, I'll just go quick. I think the first thing is, you know, whether you're going to use an advisor or not, do your research, get educated, right? So we talk to advisors that have been, you know, in the business for 30, 40, 50 years that we know kind of in the industry, and information wasn't as easily accessible as it is now, right? So if you're going to get investing, I don't care if it's Robinhood with us, with whoever, E-Trade, you know, you can easily find some education. You can find some bad information as well, right? But if you do your research and try to get educated, and then I think it's just start early, you know, as often as you can, invest and, you know, talk to people that may be in positions that you'd like to be, right? Is what we always do, right? We look at other advisors that are managing a heck of a lot more money than we are, have more clients, or, you know, have more staff, and we're trying to model our business after that. So I think from an investing approach, you can do it the same way, right? You've talked about Dave Ramsey, there's Warren Buffett. There's, I mean, there's all these people out there that have books and articles and podcasts. So I think that's just an easy thing to get educated. It helps you kind of find the direction that, you know, you want to get into.
Yeah, find someone you trust. Find someone you can trust in, and, you know, ask a friend who they work with from a financial advisor perspective, someone that you trust, that you look up to, that you think is financially, you know, successful, or whatever the case may be. Just, you know, that find someone that you can trust. And I think that's where Mike and myself have been able to build our clientele and our business from a trust factor, where, you know, I'd say probably 90%, 95% of our new clients come to us via a referral from some sort of client or center of influence, or someone that we work with closely that we refer business back and forth with, because it's just a trust factor.
Right on. Yeah, I love it. I mean, I say this all the time to people too. Surround yourself with who you want to be. I go to these real estate meetups, and there's people there that are doing way more than what I'm doing, like leaps and bounds above. And I always try to surround myself with people who I think are better than me or doing better than me. And that just motivates me to just keep going and keep striving to keep climbing up to the top. So I'm glad that we all have that same mentality. That's really awesome, guys. Maybe it's a Northeast thing too. You know, if I'm ever back up in that area, we'll go out and grab a beer and some pizza or something, or a bagel.
Listen, we'll buy you pizza anytime. We're just happy you got a Yankees hat behind you. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
Conversation might've went a little different. No, I'm joking.
Oh yeah. Of course. All right. Hey, so I think this has been really great. I really enjoyed this conversation. Great information that you guys are putting out. You guys are doing some amazing things. So if people wanted to find out more about you guys, about Mike and Zach, and learn more about Emeritus Wealth Group, you know, where can they find more about you guys? You have a website, social media you could share with us?
Yeah, absolutely. Our website is emerituswealthgroup.com, E-M-E-R-I-T-U-S group. emerituswealthgroup.com. On social media, our Instagram handle is The Financial Guides, G-U-I-D-E-S. I'm sure you could leave that in the notes or however you do it. Yep. You know, our personal Instagrams, you know, you could follow us. We got, again, Zach said, we're an open book. We got nothing to hide. Mine's at Mike Sirocco, M-I-K-E-S-O-R-O-K-O. Zach's at Z-Zenda5, Z-E-N-D-A-5. You know, on Facebook, Emeritus Wealth, you know, you can go to our website. Love to, you know, give back, help, you know, answer questions all the time. We have clients truly throughout the country, right? It's kind of the joke in our business. Once you get licensed, investments, insurance, financial planning, wealth management, it's very easy to add an additional state, right? Some back end compliance things we do. But yeah, we've gotten licensed in more states through COVID and the Zoom world than probably we ever would have imagined when we started back in 2013. Nobody in Hawaii yet. So that's a new goal to, you know, give us a reason to fly out there and see some people again. But, you know, happy to help and give back.
Really appreciate it, guys. I will have all of that stuff in the show notes. We'll make sure we get that out there so people can find it. They can copy and paste or click, whatever they got to do. But definitely we'll have your info out there so people can check you guys out. Again, Mike, Zach, absolute pleasure having you guys on the show. Really appreciate you taking some time to talk with me today.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us, Mike. We had a blast out here, so appreciate it.
Right on.
Thanks for listening to the Average Joe Finances Podcast, your source for beating debt, saving money, and investing. Learn more at averagejoefinances.com.
The Average Joe Finances Podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only. Do not use this for any real estate or investment making decisions.